Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking housing. It's been a while, Martin. It's been almost a week since we spoke housing.
I know. It's like it fell off the agenda so that we could get pints, Tony, you know?
We are joined by Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil's Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien. Dara, thanks for taking the time to talk to us again.
Delighted, Tony. Glad to be back. It's been a while, all right. So, yeah, good to be back having a chat and hopefully update you on what we're at.
Actually, it's funny. I want to start at the beginning in terms of the first time. It was March 2019 where you were the spokesperson for housing. Yeah. And you sat in this very room where I am now and you told me that you supported the right to housing if it meant constitutional change and if it meant the referendum. You still do? Is it going to be part of your Housing for All plan? And if there's going to need a referendum, will you campaign and advocate for it?
Yeah, no, I remember very well the first time up in the box room there upstairs, looking very sharp there today. But I do still support it, frankly. The Housing for All plan is a slightly different thing, Tony. But that is basically within a week or so, I'll be publishing a multi-annual plan on housing for government, right? And it'll be how we're going to resource both public and affordable housing, cost rental housing. It's very much on the investment side, okay? You may have picked up that about 2 months ago, I announced another program for government commitment, which I announced the establishment of the Commission on Housing. And I think that in itself is a really important thing because it provides an opportunity to get stakeholders involved, but also that we have a transgovernmental approach to housing. What I mean by that is when every government changes, there seems to be there can be a change in direction or a pause between one government and the next as to what you do. So it's a whole reset and time is lost. Fundamentally, I think most of us understand what needs to be done in housing. We need to build more homes, build more public homes, more affordable homes, and reduce homelessness. So what I'm going to do with the commission is there is a branch of the Commission on Housing which will deal with legislative and constitutional change. And I would expect the commission in a time-bound way when it's up and running in September to look at that particular issue. I've met, Mercy Law Centre done a lot of good work on this, a good report there. We've seen what's done in other countries, not just in Europe, but not just on the constitutional side, the legislative side that backs that up, okay? And I think there would be work to be done, by the way, to pass a referendum on housing, because there's a misconception about what a right to housing means.
Will you advocate and will you campaign for it?
Tony, if I as Minister for Housing bring forward a referendum on housing and there's a commitment to do that, absolutely, I'll campaign for it, and absolutely, and I'd be responsible for it too. So we've got to define what it means and what it looks like. What it looks like in relation to responsibility for our housing authorities across the country, responsibilities for government, and what it means for our citizens. So we need to get it right, and it is a PFG commitment for a referendum on housing. We will do it. I've already met a number of the good stakeholder groups like Wayne Stanley and others, and Right to Housing, and you know, there's a lot of good
Home
work.
For Good. Yeah,
Home for Good.
Oh no, so have I, and we've done plenty of work. Okay, so I'm happy enough that we can. That's what we're talking about here. Just to get back down to the nitty gritty though of the actual in the housing situation, in terms of. We've seen the summer economic statement launched yesterday, but it was kind of launched and there's still disagreements in it. There's still how much of this capital spending is going to go there. Can you tell me how much additional capital spending is going to go towards housing, Dara?
No, not yet, because I'm going to publish that in the Housing for All plan, okay? And I'll come back and talk to you guys then. What the summer economic statement is, it sets out the parameters of the forthcoming budget, okay? And it also does to deal with some of the criticisms that the Fiscal Advisory Council had of previous SESs, is it looks to the medium term. So it actually projects what we're going to do over the next 3 years. Now, on capital expenditure, you'll see there's a broad statement on what that's going to be. Within Housing for All, I will then publish a multi-annual plan, which will be target-based, which will show what we're allocating towards affordable, what we're allocating towards social, homeless services, and other areas there, and how we're going to continue to reduce homelessness and increase the number of public homes built and get affordable housing and cost rental up and running. And that's something I did say to you before when I was on, that I'm a firm believer in affordable housing and cost rental. And within a year of that bill passed, 101 votes to 8, even though all the detractors that were, you know, about saying they didn't like bits of it, 101 votes to 8, it's not a bad result. And we've the first cost rental homes open within a year.
Derek, can I ask, does cost rental mean cost rental in the European context, or are we talking cost rental still with a developer profit?
No, I think, well, if you look at Vienna, by the way, there's a margin in the Vienna model, okay, because it allows for ethical investments by way of pension funds. The first cost rental that I'm doing for 440 are direct intervention by the state of 35 million euro of exchequer money, your money and my money. And
you know what's happening now? I'm about to interrupt the podcast because we need to ask you to put your hands in your pockets. If you're listening to this, if you enjoy the various podcasts across the network, be it the two Norris, be it Police, be it Glow West, which has had 82 episodes consecutive, unbelievable stuff put out by Caroline.
Do you know how many episodes we did today, Tony? Where were we at?
601.
I can't believe 601. It just flew by, really.
It did. I recall, Martin, at the beginning of lockdown, we weren't sure where we were going, if you remember. I was driving
around. No, we didn't know. Tony.
Driving around with USB mics in the car, handing them out to the contributors and the people who do this, seeing what would happen, what would work. And since then, we've put out, I think, about an average of 11 or 12 podcasts a week. And now that's across the platform, but nonetheless, the echo chamber has been the bulk of that. And it doesn't happen unless people actually support it. I've taken a lot of criticism saying, why are they always in crisis mode? I'll tell you why we're in crisis mode, because we chose to try and expand. We chose to try and grow. We tried to do the things that we said we'd do. We'd honor the commitments that we made to people, and we tried to work with a producer, work with other things and get things done. And it doesn't actually make any financial sense. It was put to us earlier, Martin. If you reduce the hours down, we'd been better off on JobBridge.
I would have, certainly. There's no doubt about that.
And it cracks me up, but it's true. And it's galling, but it's true. If you value the Tortoise Shack, please put something back into it. It's a fancy cup of coffee once a month. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. That's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. You'll find it's well worth it, because actually you've missed out. If you haven't been listening, you missed Dara O'Brien's conversation with us. You missed Owen O'Brien's. You missed Ivana Bacic's. You've missed loads of stuff that is, it's staying behind the paywall. And the simple reason it has to stay behind the paywall, Martin, you know this, is that if we don't...
because we have patrons, and we like to honor the patrons as well with the stuff that we do. So there's some of the stuff that has to stay behind the paywall. Otherwise, what's the point in being a patron? That's the point of it. Look, to become on board with this, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's easy done. You'll have it done in 2 minutes. And then you're contributing too. While it's not a family operation, it certainly feels like one. Thanks.
Enjoy your podcast.
Everyone else is invested in cost rental housing, partnered with the AHBs, and then they've borrowed just over 100 million from the HFA to get the schemes off the ground. So the good thing about it is I wanted to prove concept, and that's why I wanted short-term, near-term delivery of it. So we see the first homes in Balbriggan just last week. We'll see Enniskerry Road, which, by the way, was a pilot announced in 2015 and still isn't tenanted. So that shows you what has been wrong. So but if 6 other schemes where we're going to have 440 tenants in place over the coming months. Now, I want to see a lot more, and Housing for All will show that trajectory, because I believe we have massive potential on cost rental. And I think the LDA, whilst people may differ as to what it should do, the LDA is going to be a very important vehicle to deliver cost rental on state lands. And the LDA could well invest in cost rental, but we own the LDA. So it depends what your definition of what investment is, okay? Do we just use purely exchequer funds, or do we, like they do in Austria when everyone refers to the Vienna model, use ethical fund investment via pension funds? And they allow a 4-5% margin and also seek a deposit on the property, which I'm not doing. You know, sorry, Martin.
Can I just ask, you know, you're going to the model of Housing for All. Do you accept now that rebuilding Ireland has failed, that you have to move away from that model and to move to a Housing for All model?
Yeah, rebuilding Ireland wasn't my plan. Basically, I've put an end to rebuilding Ireland since I took over. I've refocused it on, you know, getting back to building public homes. Very clearly, I want to phase out leasing, with the exception of mortgage to rent and repair and lease, which I think are good options for people who are in systemic mortgage arrears. But you know, there were elements of Rebuilding Ireland that are good and that I'll retain in the Housing for All plan. Good concepts. Did it achieve everything it was supposed to achieve? No, it didn't.
It was a disaster, Dara.
Well, Tony, you could say that, yeah. And I've been quite critical of it. I think the over-reliance in relation to HAP in particular, which is now a necessity, by the way, and I've heard opposition spokespeople say, well, get rid of HAP. Let me just finish on this one, Tony, because it's important. We've 58,000 families supported by HAP, right? And I had to make provision to support another 15,000 this year in the budget. I'd rather they permanent homes, okay? And that's what we got to pivot towards and make sure that tipping point happens. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, I'll go back to the point again. HAP, Mel Reynolds' point was that HAP was supposed to be introduced as a temporary measure, and we've hooked the market on it. The previous government's own report said for every HAP tenancy in Dublin at the time, costs have gone up since then, obviously, but they could build two social homes, as they were termed, I think, in the report. So, but just in terms of the actual numbers we're talking, COVID obviously has taken a hammer to everything. Yeah. But where do we stand this year? I think it's a fair question.
Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
Where do we stand this year and what's your projections?
I'm going to do two things. 2020, between public and private, we completed just over 20,000 homes, about 20,600 homes, okay? About 7,000 of them were social homes, so, you know, well over 40% public homes. This year, what we're projecting probably around the same, between 18,000 and 20,000 overall house completions, okay? But that's not without risk either. That can be seen as quite optimistic. On the social housing side, I don't yet have the projections, but the Q1 figures weren't good. Okay. So the bottom line is between 2020 and 2021, we're going to be about 26,000 homes down. If we agree, and we're not saying we do, but that we need 33,000 homes a year on average, okay, and more, we're now 26,000 down since 2020. Okay, because we're minus 13,000 last year, we'll be at least minus 13,000 this year. So that shows the scale. Now, the social house building, and through the AHBs in particular, they've kind of caught up. So we generally do catch up a bit in the last quarter. So we're looking at what we can do to expedite delivery and phase delivery of homes. But we're going to be down on the 9,500 direct builds, and quite substantially, to be honest with you.
That kind of reminds me of when Mr. Coveney held the position as housing minister, and he promised 50,000 houses up to social housing up to 2016, and the actual figure that came through in the end was 6,000, which was just so far short. Can I just take you back to HAP? Section 6 of the new rent legislation, if that's enacted, that's supposed to stop the upward only 4% rent increases which were gifted by government to landlords.
I've stopped
and
that.
Has it stopped?
Yeah.
So the 4% increase no longer applies then?
Martin, I brought forward the five pieces of tenancy legislation, and even some of my greatest detractors would recognise that there's been some very significant changes on tenants' rights within that, particularly around the rent arrears piece, but specifically on your question. At the end of this year, I had flagged that I was going to bring forward in the autumn a tenant and rent reform bill, which I still am. But when the 8% issue presented itself, and in relation to the rollover of rent increases, I brought forward some measures. One in particular is linking rents in the RPZs to the harmonized index of consumer prices. Okay. And that's done now. That's done for 74% of tenancies within the RPZs, and I've extended them to December 2024. Now, what I am doing, though, I'm conscious that there's 26% of tenancies that sit outside the RPZs. I had to act quickly in relation to that. I will be looking at elements of that in the rent reform bill, the sixth piece of tenancy legislation that I bring forward in the autumn. But to answer your question, Martin, in RPZ areas, is it done with regard to inflation? Yes, it is done. Absolutely, it's done.
Well, that's really positive news, because I know people, we speak the threshold regularly, and they're getting hundreds of phone calls, people saying these demands are coming in. So I think
it's illegal now. Can I say this, Tony, because it's really important. I do a lot of work with John Mark and the guys in threshold, and they're really important from a tenancy advocate point of view. It is illegal now. The president signed that bill into law last weekend. So if any landlord within an RPZ seeks an increase in rent above the HICP, which year on year now is about 1.9%. We've seen a bit of a blip in inflation, but the average has been over the last 3 years about 0.73%. Okay. So we're looking at linking it to inflation. It's illegal. And it's illegal, by the way, under the law, and it's punishable, and rightly so. So a landlord cannot do that.
Can I ask, I want to get to the funds and the built to rent models, the REITs, and the fact that they're, you know, the long-term leasing, which was introduced, like we have a legacy of where we've gone from Simon Coveney, Alan Kelly, Owen Murphy, and I know they all tinkered with various issues around rebuilding Ireland, but the enhanced leasing scheme was basically money for old rope for some of these funds, Nara. And you've said earlier in this conversation that you need to phase out this leasing. But can I ask on that there, you did say that one of the reasons that you had to exempt these things is that there was research done to show that the funds should be exempted from the 10%. Can you publish that research? Can we see it? Because I'd love to, you know me.
No, I'm nerd. I know that. I didn't want to say that. At least you owned up to it. But two things. There is about, and there's about 2,400 leases going through the system, right? We talked about HAP earlier on. I'm not a massive fan of enhanced leasing. I've said that, okay? And you will see when I publish Housing for All the trajectory in relation to the abolition of them. If I got rid of them overnight, okay, and actually are put at risk. Now, by the way, this was a finance measure, but of course I was involved in it, in protecting against family homes against bulk sale, right? We exempted AHBs and local authorities on the basis that there are about 2,500 families due to get homes through enhanced leasing. Now, what was interesting about this, if I could say, is that two of the main opposition parties, both Sinn Féin and Eoin Óibrín and Jed Nash for Labour, both sent in PQs the week before imploring me to look at the leases and about 200 homes that they had reckoned that were going to be approved for leasing, that if we didn't provide an exemption, that those homes would be lost. And that was all then lost in the big political noise and people beating their chests and stuff. And that's fine. That's part. But the reality of it is, I wasn't going to risk the homes of 2,400 families. And that's why we sought that exemption. Now, in relation to the advice that we get, there was a lot of work done between my own department in housing and between the Department of Finance. And anything that we're allowed to publish, I have never a difficulty in doing that. But it is, in fairness, David Hall, who you guys know very well, and I know David does great work with iCare. David was asked about this as well. He said he fully understood, didn't like it, which I don't either, but that we had to ensure that the pipeline was protected. Because what else happens? And I'm back with you guys, right?
Well, one of the things I say is you can't turn off the tap immediately without turning on the other one slowly. So we have.
I do that.
People are practical and pragmatic about that. This 33,000.
No, can I say this though? A lot of people weren't practical or pragmatic.
That's just politics.
Hold on, they weren't. Okay, we had Mary Lou McDonald banging on for a week, shouting and roaring about it, when our own housing spokesperson was actually sending me parliamentary questions asking for homes to be exempted.
But that's now, politics.
That's ducks and drakes, and that's been completely disingenuous. But anyway, look, get back to the point. I take it. I had to say that. I had to get that off my chest. Okay. I've done that.
Just one thing on the 33,000 figure. Yes. If you don't have the figures to head, but I'd like to know what you consider the mix in there, affordable, private, what's the for rent, what's mm-hmm. that? What are we looking at in those sort of terms?
We actually, it's a real good question. I got the ESRI to do this, so it's not me doing this. The ESRI have done the research, and there is a split across the different housing tenures, which I am going to publish, okay? And I'm going to publish it in Housing for All. Problem with this podcast is we're about 8 days away from that, so I can't tell you now. But I will. But fundamentally, what you will see, and being serious for a second, is a substantial increase in affordable housing delivery, because none have been delivered in the last few years. Let's be straight about that. That's why I've championed the Affordable Housing Bill, which is now passed. Secondly, in relation to public housing provision, the targets will be, and if we achieve them, which we have to achieve them, will be well above any build done in any years in decades. Okay. And cost rental, there will be targets within it. So basically, you'll see the private target, the social target, the affordable target, and within the affordable, the cost rental, very clearly set out. And if I can give you a guide, but don't hold me to it, you're looking at on the 33,000, about half, if not a little bit more than half, between social and affordable housing, right? And then the private sector, which some will argue that we do. They'll build homes too, and they will. So it will be about half and half, or maybe a little bit either side. But that's to give you an indication of it, and that's really significant. Like I've said to you before, when I met you guys, like I want the state back building, and they're doing that now. And okay, we've had COVID, we've got to get past that and build capacity. And I visited every local authority, and one thing that is very telling is that we've got to build the capacity up, the human resource, and also the ability to do it. So when someone says to you, I'm going to build 20,000 public homes in a year, and just give me the money, we'll borrow, we'll build 20,000. I ask the question, well, where and who's going to build them and how long it's going to take? Because that's fantasy stuff, right? I know what we can build in the sense of the resources that we have, and we've got to build on that, right? 20,000 public homes in 1 year, which others talk about, we just don't have the capacity to do it, but we will build.
I think the Taoiseach said it in a recent when he went.
I was referring to your friend Owen. Oh, I know. Actually, because he just keeps pulling that figure out of the sky and saying, "I'll build 20,000."
I'm pretty sure Leo Varadkar said 40,000 homes.
When he said 40,000 homes on average, but I said 33,000.
Guys, I'm going to bring you back to affordable, because this is a really important point on affordable. It's not really affordable. It's subsidized. And is the Department of Finance going to pay that subsidy?
Respectfully, Martin, it is affordable and it's not subsidized, because it's the state taking a stake. And so, and I explained the different models, right? We've talked about cost rental. That's affordable long-term rental. And I think all of us agree that that's a good tenure of housing that we need to get going. And it is sustainable. And it actually means that the rents coming back in are going to pay for the development, and they're going to pay for the management. And also to potentially pay for further developments. I think that's cost rental. Two other elements then on affordable purchase. One is local authorities building affordable homes, right, on their own sites. Like I have up the road from me here in Lusk, okay? In Dúnemer and Lusk, 165,000 to 265,000. That's the price range. The local authority will take a stake, okay? Because I'm, on behalf of the taxpayers, subventing each of those homes to the tune of 50,000. This is O'Coolon building it. This is what O'Coolon model does, by the way. So if there is a cost to the exchequer, but that's a stake in the home, okay? So that helps to bridge the affordability gap, but the homeowner does not need to pay that money back, okay? If the homeowner sells the home in the future, yes, they do, and you build up the affordable home that way.
But if you move out of the O'Coolon model and you move into private sector, the private sector decides the subsidy. They decide what's affordable, minister.
They actually don't, because of the way I've structured the bill. I'm glad you've mentioned that. And I don't want to be just disagreeing with you guys for the sake of it, but it's important we talk about this, because one is not just the O'Coolon model. That's the local authority model. That isn't an O'Coolon model. They'll deliver us, which is good. And the lads are great, Hugh and that, and they do a real good job. There are many others in Boherboy and Cork now. The Cork City and County Council are building affordable homes there. That'll be in prices of around 200,000. And yes, the state takes an equity. Nothing wrong with the state having a stake in a home. That's exactly what we do in social housing. On the private side, I have capped what is available there. So what I'm doing is bringing in shared equity to allow people who are renting now and paying €2,000 a month to be able to buy a home and pay €1,000 a month, and the state will take a stake in it. And all the people who said it was an additional mortgage and it was debt-driven have now been proven it's not correct. It's an equity stake. There's no payment on it for the first 5 years, a tiny servicing charge for the rest, and no obligation to pay it out. And I think that's going to deliver affordable homes at quite a substantial rate, and it will boost the supply because the market will have to respond to it. So we need to get on with the issue of delivering affordable homes. So we need to do things differently. I've looked at other models. Others said that this was, we're just copying the English model. We're not. Our model is far better because it targets those who need it. It's not available to everyone. And the very final thing is extending the Part 5 provision. I think a big mistake of a previous government was removing the other 10, going from 20 to 10% on social. So for every new estate build, it'll be 10% social. And now I've added in, and it's in passed by law, 10% affordable too. And the final thing is that is all copper fastened by a national affordable purchase scheme in legislation for the first time, and a national cost rental scheme in legislation. All right. So
I want to come in, right? You've had a good run of it, and I think that's really fair.
You've
laid that out. But I would ask you a question. I've mentioned Alan Kelly, so we've mentioned Simon Coven, we've mentioned Owen Murphy. The people who they go to, I mean, we saw all sorts of promises were made. Just, if I could make this personal to you, how are you going to get the same department that hasn't delivered for over a decade to deliver now?
Good question. I've changed it already in a year, Tony. It's not easy, okay? It isn't, because you've got to, it's like turning around a big boat. But for the first time, I brought in an affordability team. When I took over, there wasn't an assistant secretary, a very good guy who's there and a really excellent team. There wasn't an affordability team. That's changed. I have a new secretary general in place, and I have a couple of my own people, but I have a different policy direction. So if you take it in relation, can I give you an example? In this year, the 12 months, which pretty much up to the 29th of June, I'll have passed, by the end of today, 9 pieces of legislation. So from Land Development Agency to Affordable Housing, 5 rent bills and planning legislation that's been passed. In the previous term of the government, for the whole term of the government, 4 and a bit years, only 12 pieces of legislation were passed in the department. So I think that shows a step up in relation to activity, but I have a different approach. I'm not going to tell you I'm going to get everything right. It is tough to move it around, but there, I think, to be fair, there's a focus across all parties, not just government, that housing is a societal issue that we need to address. The problem for government, if you read it, and I know you guys have, you know, there are some, in my view, some very noble objectives in that which are achievable. And we've got to do things differently. So like in the area of homelessness, I set up the task force and chaired up myself. It was the first thing I did, working with the NGOs directly, okay? Really good people in Simon and all across the board, DePaul, Peter McFerries, et cetera, all working with us, telling me what we need to get our numbers down and to get people housed in permanent homes. The Voids program, if I could just turn to this one, using our own public housing stock better, okay? So within last year, we've got 3,600 homes back into use within a 7-month period, because I set targets for the councils and said, if you don't get them done by December, we're not paying for them. So we're doing that again this year, another 3,000. So I suppose, look, it's easy for me to say, I'm Die Great, I'm doing everything different. It's not that, it's a different approach and there's a different emphasis. And I think it'll work.
Let me just come back on that a little. Yeah, you may have a different approach and a different emphasis. But when you went to the finance, when you went to the finance minister looking to cost this, he basically told the Taoiseach to sod off. So, I mean, who is in charge of the I mean, he who controls the purse controls it all.
Hey, Martin, that's not correct. I don't believe everything you read in the paper, okay? Like, we're going to have, which I think is important. I hear what you're saying. Government make decisions. And obviously, we've got to make decisions as a collective of it's the state's money. How do we spend it? And there's lots of competing priorities. I get that. We've health, we've enterprise, we've jobs, we've housing and the lot. I'm going to be able to publish within a matter of weeks or days a costed multi-annual housing plan that will give absolute certainty to people of what we're going to do and how it's going to be paid for, agreed by government. And it's substantial, okay? Some will say it's not enough, and that's fine, right? It is substantial. I'm not going to give you the figure. And it is a significant increase. But more importantly, then, it allows me, with our councils and with our approved housing bodies and with our housing associations, and yes, and with the private sector, to be able to say, here's what we're doing now for the next 4 years. And my housing plan will actually go right the way out to 2030. Okay. I think that's important that we give that certainty, because fundamentally, we all know we need to build more. We need more homes for our people. We need to reduce homelessness. If you take family, child and family homelessness now.
I don't disagree with anything you've just said in terms of how we need to fundamentally change that. And I think there's a lot of positive things, and I think listeners can make up their own minds on it.
Sure.
But you've mentioned voids, which is very interesting. I don't know if voids are mentioned. I know they weren't mentioned really in Rebuilding Ireland.
I could be wrong. Yeah.
We have capacity as well. Like need doesn't equal demand, as Orla Hegarty always tells me. We have capacity, whether it be in dereliction that can be brought into thing, or whether it be in capacity above retail units, as the new Lord Mayor of Dublin, Alison Gilliland, was talking to us about it only this week.
Sure.
What, you know, how do we bring that back into it? Because, Dara, to be honest with you, the vacant site levy was... It didn't work at all.
It hasn't. I think it's been an abject failure. Okay. And that will be addressed in Housing for All as well. We need stuff that works. If you take above shop, right, everyone, and I agree, would love more, much more people to live above shop. How are we going to actually do that whilst maintaining the standards that are required of those renovations? If I look at what's done in Britain, for argument's sake, in older cities, okay, so you take Dublin, Limerick, with a lot of Georgian squares, a lot of buildings that 4 or 5 floors aren't being used. Britain has 4 categories of preservation. Okay, we have one. Okay, Orla's spoken about this before herself and Catherine Meehan and the Royal Institute of Architects. We need to do something there, and what that means is that you can do a lot behind the facade. So unless it's an historically important and internally unique type of building, it gives an opportunity to do more and for easier conversion. If we keep doing what we're doing under the like living cities type initiatives and that type of stuff, where really the only people who can convert older buildings like that are people with lots and lots of money, and then they happen to then become investors, well, then you have a problem. So I think we need to simplify that piece. Now, on dereliction, by the way, Dublin City Council and Cork and Limerick. Limerick, I think, is going to do a magnificent job. Limerick's going to take off in relation to housing within the city because they own most of the significant sites through their own development agency, Limerick 2030. And I provided a lot of money for them to get on with it. Dublin is difficult in relation to developing brownfields. And even with the older sites that are there, so if you take Dorset Street, there's been some really good work done Dorset Street in relation to renovation of old properties. But then we have, it's like St. Mary's Mansions. Great job, St. Mary's Mansions. It took 10 years though, Tony. Like 10 years to do that. So if we look at, right up by the Black Church and the whole area there, we have lots of grounds where there are older apartments that you need, if you repurpose them, we do it. One thing I am doing now, because I was a bit concerned that we've 96 projects within Dublin City, just DCC put aside for what's called regeneration. Now, regeneration is important, but if we need to deliver homes now, well, what are we going to do in the meantime? So in fairness, I've got agreement with the head of housing in DCC and sat down with them to take a number of units in Constitution Hill and to open them back up and do deep refurbs. Okay. So if you take Constitution Hill, we've about half of those apartments there are boarded up. I want those hoardings taken down and I want us to spend the money on getting them back into use. And I think we need to have a mix of regen and deep refurb. Because if we just keep thinking, and I'm not DCC are great and all that, but we cannot just have stuff boxed off to regen and say we're going to do that in 10 years' time, because we need it right now.
There seems to be a willingness on your part, Minister, not to be ideological about housing, but you are in government with a party who are completely ideological about housing.
Who's that?
Fine Gael, of course. They have their idea. They are completely
actually. Martin, can I make one point and let you ask your question? Yeah. There's also a conflict there, but it's a three-party government. So particularly when it comes to housing, you have, in my view, you have a centre-right party who control the purse strings, and then you have another Green Party who are opposed, say, one-off housing, and they want this. And
not
I'd say
gross.
So there's a conflict there on all sides. But go ahead, Martin. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, in your opinion.
And we'll say, in my opinion.
No, not you, Martin. I'm talking to Tony, sorry.
But to everybody that's looking from the outside in, Fine Gael are ideologically opposed to building public housing on public land. And they're just ideologically opposed to it.
Just recent Dublin Bay South election, James Gagan didn't get elected, but I do recall him voting against public housing on public land at the Oscar Traynor site, something Fianna Fáil voted for. So just to reinforce that point, Martin, go ahead.
Other parties voting against public housing on public land on many occasions in Dublin. And that's the main opposition party. But go ahead, but Martin.
If I may just address that, I don't believe that the main opposition parties are voting against public housing on public land. What they're voting against is not enough public housing.
Okay, I'm going to come in for a quick sec because I want to answer your question first, which is about are the three parties diametrically opposed in relation to provision of housing? I honestly haven't found that. I'm the Minister for Housing, so I drive the plan, and it's my job to get agreement within Cabinet. And I think you'll see, and I know, to be fair, you guys will pore over the housing plan when it's published, and I welcome a chance to go through, because it's heavily focused on public housing and public land, on affordable housing, and yes, also on provision of private housing. Now, let's just call a spade in relation to votes against housing. And let's just take Dublin, right? In my own area here, just up the road in Donabate, we have probably the best site that Fine Gael County Council have to provide 1,200 homes, okay? Now, 31 councillors voted for it and 9 voted against. And the 9 who voted against were Sinn Féin and PPP and the Sock Dems. Now, what they voted against was 238 social homes, 238 affordable purchase homes, and 150 cost rental homes, and the remaining less than 600 private homes. That's what they opposed, okay? On Oscar Traynor, which I am hopeful, I'm not going to go into Oscar Traynor because I'm working away with the council on trying to get a resolution. Because even if you think about all of this, and Tony mentioned ideology, my ideology is get homes for people, okay? I believe in public housing and public land. I firmly believe in home ownership, though. I want people, young and not so young, to have a pathway to owning their own home. And I believe in cost rental. But really, my thing is, what frustrates me is, we have a lot of people who want to just write and talk. I'm not talking about you guys, you know, but write and talk about housing. But when it comes down to it, and those who can actually make a difference by actually voting to deliver it, they will find a reason not to. Okay? And that's, we've really got to think above this now. You're not going to agree with everything I do, and fine. And other political parties aren't going to agree with it. But I think we have to get our housing numbers up. We have to. And I have a plan that's going to do that. And Fianna Fáil and my own party, it's central to our core belief in relation to provision of homes for our people. It's a basic necessity. And I'm absolutely confident that we have the wherewithal, we have the know-how, we have the knowledge, we have the expertise to actually do that. And that's why I love doing the job, because it needs to be done.
Okay. And I think this is, you've actually laid out your stall there on the basis of, because Fianna Fáil will fall or rise on your success, Dara.
No pressure, so left, Tony.
We only have to look at the internal. Like, I know you came out and said that there was no internal struggle for the leadership. Yet we constantly hear rumors. You know,
it's a little bit unfortunate that there is a big focus in some of the media on what happens within Fianna Fáil, and we probably should be flattered. Okay, but let's just deal with some of the facts of it. Okay, 2020 general election, we came out the biggest party. We're the biggest party in local government. We're the biggest party in the Shannon. And yeah, there's always disagreements within parties. But like on the housing front, by the way, we're at idem. We're at one. Like we know, and you're right, it is. It's a great responsibility that I have, but also a great honour to do it. And maybe it helps from where I've grown up or where I live. And it's not just a Dublin thing, but I see the housing issues present themselves every single day in my own constituency, where I live, with my own mates and that. And we can see if we simplify it, what things can be done to improve it in the short term, like with regard to the change on rents. That had been talked about for a long time. It's done, right? Linking rents to inflation. Cost rental. Everyone talking about cost rental, writing books about cost rental, but doing nothing about it at the end of the day. Cost rental is done, okay? And we'll build on it. So, you know, It's a responsibility, Tony, but I think as a party, Fianna Fáil, our responsibility is to the people, not to ourselves. So if we succeed and the people see that, great. And we've great councillors all across the country who are working away on the ground supporting housing and supporting developments, and we need that. And there are people of all other parties doing the same too.
You have a tight timeline.
Very, because I've got to be in the Shannon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's a tight time.
Yeah, you have a tight timeline to convince people that Fianna Fáil are going to provide where Fine Gael happened for over a decade. Sure. One last question for me. On the SHDs, is it advertised that they're going to end in October, but the actual factual position is that it's the last date for application, not that they'll end?
Yeah. Basically, first thing is the SHDs, I'm getting rid of them, okay? And like I got rid of co-living. I said I would, and I got rid of co-living. And SHDs, we negotiated that they wouldn't be extended after February next year. We legally require a transition period. I've now flagged that. I've got a bill coming in the autumn, which will replace the SHDs and basically give planning for large-scale developments back to the local authorities. Two-stage process. Setting statutory timelines too, because we need to make sure that, like, SHDs on paper look like they've worked. okay, that they provided, you know, X amount of permissions, but the conversion rate was very, very low. And there was a democratic deficit, I believe, in the sense that some of the SHD decisions that were made, and I'm not talking about specific ones because I'm not allowed as Minister for Responsibility for Planning, appeared to me not to have regard to local area plans, master plans, county development plans, etc. So to answer your question, the 29th of October, if I get the bill passed, that is, because I only got it approved at Cabinet, quite complex, will be the last day for requesting a pre-application consultation with An Bord Pleanála. So if, let's say, someone has a new project and they don't request a pre-application consultation before that date, they cannot apply. It's gone. You're back to the council.
Okay, so it's
29th. But if you're in, this is what I got, just so you're clear and you don't come back to me and say, geez, Darry, you didn't tell me this. A planning application, which was, so if someone's had a pre-consultation and are in the process, they will be able to lodge their application by the 31st of December because they're in the process, okay? But what this signals, though, very clearly is that I'm restoring the primary decision-making function to local authorities, and I'm also introducing mandatory timelines to ensure that there's an efficient process in delivering large-scale development. So, Martin, to answer it, SHDs fundamentally, for all intents and purposes, are going to be gone at the end of October. If you're still in the system, there will be some lag time between then and when they're shut down, and the new bill will then be enacted. And I think it's a really good thing.
Just one call to you, Dara. This is a big brief you have. We broke all sorts of records in terms of homelessness with over 4,000 children in emergency accommodation. The human costs of this, everybody will tell you, is massive. The mental health impacts, the developmental stages, and all we're doing. This is a huge challenge. And I've spoken to you for a long time now. I hope you know that this is the real crux of this. We've moved on to numbers of housing on this on this podcast, but it really comes down to the human stories, the people behind this, Dara. Mm-hmm. What's your kind of take on where you see our homelessness dealing with it and removing it, effectively trying to eradicate it, please?
Yeah, well, I'm genuinely, Tony, I'm actually glad that you've raised that. And I mentioned homelessness twice during the course of this, but it has to be the number one priority because that's the humanitarian piece. Okay. I've been in family hubs, not too far from where you're sitting, and all around the country, and visit homeless services, and you're meeting real people who never in a million years thought that they would be without a home. Now, to start positively, over the last 12 months, we've seen a really significant improvement in child and family homelessness, nearly 50% reduction. And that's continued post blanket eviction bans because we've been focusing permanent housing solutions for those people, right? The other piece that is trickier is the singles homelessness. And the reason I say that is, one, we don't have enough properties that are suitable. And two, a lot of people who are single and homelessness will have other complex needs. And that's why Housing First, we're going to expand it further. Housing First is a good solution and it works because you have a wraparound service for people. But what do we need to do? I signed virtually now in Lisbon, there was a conference a couple of weeks ago, and I've committed Ireland to an eradication of homelessness by 2030. And I think that is absolutely doable. It's, for me, genuinely, above all else, it's the number one thing, okay? And progress is being made. But what we need to get is, in certain parts of the country, there's effectively no homelessness in statistical terms, which is good. I've been in Waterford, for argument's sake, and Waterford have a brilliant way of doing it, where Focus Ireland, Waterford City and County Council, have basically a hub of services, a one-stop shop. We have that in Dublin to a degree with the DRHE as well. But we need to be providing the permanent housing solutions for the families in particular. So we've now 75% less families accessing emergency accommodation through hotels. That's why strengthening tenancy legislation is important to stop the flow. But then a lot of families who are renting don't feel secure in those rents, okay? And they just don't because they don't know whether the landlord's going to sell next year, don't know what's going to happen. Now, we can tinker around with certain things of changing this and that. Fundamentally, at the end of the day, we want to get them either a long-term cost rental home, a public home, or an affordable home. And that you're reducing the dependence on the private rental market. And that's a must. But for me, it is the thing. And it has to be the guiding focus in everything that we do. Even while we're working on all the other things, is how are we getting on at homelessness? And we're down below, you know, it's not just numbers, but we're down. So I'm not even going to quote the figure, right? Because there's still far too many people and families who are homeless. But we're making progress, but we've got to keep pushing on it. Like, I give you one, like, but it has to be all government departments too. Health have improved a lot, and we've got them in the tent now working away in it. But you mentioned vacancy earlier on. Like, that's something that really does bother me, that when we have a lot of vacant units, how can we simplify things to make sure that those vacant homes and vacant units are not vacant anymore and are given to the right people? So can we do it? Absolutely. But that's why we also need a housing plan, so people can see how it's going to happen. And then it's the implementation of it is the real important thing, you know?
Minister, we understand that you're in a rush to get into the Shannon, and thank you very much for taking the time with us to have this discussion this morning. And it is nice to at least hear a difference of opinion voiced between what Fine Gael told us, that homelessness was normal, and you're saying that homelessness has to be eradicated. Yeah. And that is nice to hear that difference. Thank you again for taking the time, Minister Brian. It's been nice to talk to you.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will be back. Oh, on Sunday is our 50th Sunday special, Martin. And we're probably...
Yay!
Wow, living in lockdown. We hope to make it a bit of fun. We're hoping that it won't be as serious as normal. But look, fair play. Dara came on. He answered the questions. They were put. Whether you make up your own mind, guys, that's the reality here. But I'm always glad when you can keep those communications going. People will probably send me a lot of shitty DMs now about this. But actually, Martin, you know what? I'm still glad we continue to have those conversations.
Yeah, as long as they don't send me shitty DMs, we're doing grand.
No one cares about you. Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.